On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
Yeah, and I think the point for me with the case by case is, again, I think thinking to some of the guys I've worked with, there are guys that are superstitious. There are guys that, you know, will do whatever you say. There are guys who really want to be involved with the decision making, and knowing the best way to present your ideas to them goes a long way. There are certain guys that if you present them with something new, and it's too much too fast, they will push back really hard. They're kind of, I have my routine, I like to do this. And that's not just in the weight room, like talking with pitching and hitting coaches, it's kind of the same feel, I think, is especially in the cage, that, you know, all the guys have all these gadgets and stuff now, like they feel a certain way doing these things. And if you recommend something that goes against that, or you tell them, oh, you know, that's eyewash, like, let's try this, like how you present it to them really is valuable. And I think that was kind of the point I was making earlier, is like coaches are starting to learn that, like, you can't just be an asshole to everybody. You can't just be like, oh, that's stupid, like, do it this way and you'll get better. Like, there are guys that will take that personal and instantly they're out on you. And learning how to effectively communicate those things to players, I think, Nate, to your point, having a really polished plan and not being afraid of being questioned really goes a long way. Like, being open enough to be, you know, Logan, to your point, like, hey, I think this is going to work, but if not, I have some other plans. And they may say, no, I think this other plan is actually going to work instead. Like, let's go there. And you have to be open to accepting that, you know, it's a two-way street. And I think, to be honest, for me, it's always been easier to connect with players compared to coaches, just because I have that genuine curiosity and love for the game of baseball that I'm just like, man, I want to help you. Like, I want to help you hit 30 homers. Like, what can we do? Or I should say, I want to help you reach your goal. What is your goal? I want to hit 30 homers. Like, dude, I'm here to help you. Like, let's do it. You know what I mean? And I think the buy-in piece is, like, if you nail your presentation to the player on what you're working on and they believe it's going to help them, instantly they have a better chance of it working. You could tell them to, you know, jump in a garbage can 100 times a day and it'll help them be a better hitter. And if you have an explanation that they believe in, they're going to jump into that garbage can full throttle. And it may not make them better, but in their mind, they're believing it. They may get better. And that's kind of, I think, the crux of, like, a lot of off-season strength and conditioning, private facilities, that kind of stuff where players go, is like, those people get bashed by other people for certain things that they do, but the players believe in the message they're receiving from those people. And that goes a long way in buy-in and belief and really just ultimately, like, getting better. It's like, if you don't believe in something, you're not going to get better. But if you do, even if it's not the best plan, you have a better chance of succeeding. So I think that's a really valuable piece, is like knowing who you're talking to and how to present it to them specifically to get that buy-in. Again, like I said, we had a player here, we were working on some stuff specifically, and, you know, we went to him, talked to him, we showed him the plan. Hey, what do you think about this? Do you think this can help you? We need the feedback from you. We need these feels from you. Where there's some players where it's like, hey, I got 10 years in the league and the whole time I've just followed exactly what the strength coach says. Like, the organization wouldn't have you here if they didn't believe that you were good at the job. So just tell me what to do. Don't tell me why we're doing it. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And, you know, on the other end of that, there's a player here that I am very, very close with, and our relationship has really been centered around, when I need him to do something, I have to yell at him. Like, I have to motherfuck him to get him to listen to me. And for me to listen to him, like, he really has to get in my face. And other people see that and they're like, dude, what are you doing? And he will tell them, like, this is how we communicate when things get serious. Like, because we have, this is just how we connect. Like, and other people are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, that's not the way to connect with people. You can't do that. And he's like, this is how it works best for us. And everybody's like, you got your little, you know, your special friend over there. We can't like connect with him. I'm like, I'm telling you, this is how you have to do it. Like, it goes against what you believe, but if that's how you connect with him, like, he'll listen. So everybody's a little different in how they receive information. And that piece is really valuable, I think. I want to get in now to more like nuts and bolts, like nitty gritty. We've kind of talked philosophically here. So getting into like the process here, going back to the very beginning, Nate, you talk about movement screens, force plates, you know, all the blending and implementation. Like, let's start right at the beginning. Player shows up to you in spring training. Like, what are you looking for? Are you looking to find things they're not good at, looking to find things you are good at? And then where does that like line of communication go from that very first day that you see them?
Yeah, I think we're just trying to create a picture of who the guy is. I think if it's somebody that's new to the org, it's exactly that. Paint the picture of who they are. And I think if they've been with us and we've screened them several times, it's where are they now and how does that compare to where they were? So you're just looking, to me, you're looking for outliers. You're looking for things that stand out on a normative scale. Like, hey, maybe they have 7 degrees of hip IR. Like, wow, that's a red flag for anybody. But maybe they've lost 20 degrees of IR relative to themselves. So that's just a different way based on the data that we have. So I think it starts with that. It starts with the passive screen and what capacities that presents. And I think, you know, you go from there and then you see, put them on the force plates and see what they're made of, what qualities they're good at, what qualities they're bad at, relative to themselves and relative to the population group that you're comparing them to. So, you know, if we have a shortstop and we put him on the plates, we want to see how he is relative to himself. And we want to see how he stacks up against his other shortstop teammates to see, hey, where do the elite guys fall at and where do you fall at? And what can we do to make your training a little more sniper? So I think we try to use that data, like I said, to paint an accurate picture of where they are now compared to where they've been and how make their training a little more sniper. So we're not just giving everybody a cookie cutter program. We're using the data that we have to help guide their training. And then, you know, like we've talked about from there, I think this becomes a working conversation with the coaches and a part of the player plan, because, you know, I find it hard to believe that if we're seeing something stand out in the weight room, that it doesn't have some sort of impact on what they're trying to do, whether it's something that they do really well on the field or something that they don't do well on the field. So I think it's important to gather the data and then be unified in how we implement it.
Yeah, lots of good stuff there from Nate. I agree. I think we need to acknowledge, I think that there's maybe not one avenue to be optimal in this way, right? Like, I think that there are 30 different organizations. I think that within that, there are maybe 30 different philosophies that may be similar, different, some portions of that. And then I think like individual coaching preferences and biases also maybe play into where do we go, right? Like, what do we do and how do we make these individual biases or opinions fit within whatever the parameters are that the organization sets as well. So I do feel like that some sort of screening process, whether it's a passive, have a passive component and active component, maybe in an ideal world, you have bits and pieces of all of the above, where we can just become more aware, cognizant of like, what are some of their limitations, but also, Chris, to your point, what are the things that they do really well and how do we further train these qualities to make sure, like, maybe it's an asset that of theirs that makes them elite at whatever it is that they do. Maybe it's a guy that's, I don't know, he's more efficiently at being east to west, efficient rotator. Maybe he drops his arm slot, goes across his body. Maybe he's better here than north to south, for example. So I think that being able to identify not only what is concerning, but maybe some of the qualities that are like advantageous for whatever it is that they're being asked to do, positionally specific, is a good place to start. I do feel like that gathering some data, some objective data, on the force plates is a good way to bucket guys or profile guys, guys that are, more strength-based guys, power-based guys, some guys that are in the middle. Maybe we need to train them more concurrently. It kind of just gives us some intuition as like, what do we need to do from a generalistic standpoint in the weight room, train these different qualities. And then we could have the conversation of, do you play to your strengths or do you address like some of the weaknesses? Maybe we'll get there. But I think from there, looking to be representative of some of the things that they're being asked to do out on the field and doing our due diligence and being objective and measurable in those ways too. So ideas such as maybe it's a med ball throw that has some velocity radar reading behind it. Maybe it's a measured plyometric, like a lateral jump, something that it looks a little more representative. Maybe it's a timing gate system for acceleration or top end speed, things that maybe are a little more representative of what we're actually being asked to do once we get in more of a competition environment, I think is kind of the next step. That's where we're actually affecting, to take us back to the very beginning of our talk here, affecting some of the on-field qualities, I think, is like where strength and conditioning performance is going. Is okay, like, yes, we're able to increase capacities from a strength and a power standpoint in the weight room. Not only are we able to do that, but we can measure and confirm that. But now how do we look to make our practices and our methods more representative of what they're actually doing out onto the field? And then from there, work collectively with our on-field skill staff, so other support staff that also are experts in their given areas, to increase these characteristics first in a controlled environment out in a workout in the tunnel, whatever. But then ultimately, Chris, to your point, like we have to have an end goal in mind too. Like, we want these things to begin showing up in game at some point, or else I would argue our rationale or our purpose behind doing what we're doing.
Yeah, we're gonna get really off the notes, off topics here. So I hope you guys don't mind. So my own, you know, you're talking, Logan, about like strengths versus weaknesses. And I've really been wrestling with that and with the idea of force production, movement strategy, and like going down that rabbit hole of like, this guy is really good at generating an enormous amount of force, but it takes him time to get there. So does that affect his pre-pitch routine, for instance, if he's, you know, an infielder, versus this guy is really twitchy, and putting him in an environment where he's in a super deep loaded position actually might slow him down, you know, when he's trying to steal backs. So like, he actually might almost be better standing up really tall and creating these angles that he can just push himself out of really fast. And like, you talk about, you know, we have these capacities that we're trying to improve. We have ways to objectively show that we're improving them. And then there's certain people that want to connect, like, if you improve this, it improves that, and thus you will improve on the field. And I think to your point is like, you know, if we're improving these capacities, even if it's in the cage or in the bullpen, like, this guy's hitting 97 in bullpens, but when he gets in a game, it's not the same. He's only 93. Like, why is that not transferring? He has 5 extra miles per hour in his bat speed in the cage. Tremendous. We did this, we measured it, but when he goes to the game, he still has the same swings. Like, where does that disconnect happen is like, really, I think, kind of that, I don't want to say secret sauce or the magic bullet or something. I don't think there's any one way to make a really good major league player, because there's so many ways that you can impact the game. But somewhere along the line between weight, or let's say assessment, weight room, training room, and then going into practice, and then from practice to game, somewhere in that chain, like, something gets lost for guys, or conversely, like, something goes really well, and it's like figuring out what was that point along the chain that went well to create transfer to the game, or what didn't go well, and is that missing piece, right? Like, we made this guy a tremendous fielder in practice, but when he gets to the game, he's making the same mistakes. Maybe we have to look at things a little bit differently and maybe set him up in a better pre-pitch, or maybe, you know, he's never going to have the range to his right, so we need to cheat him to the right, and then he's really good at the left. Or knowing that the guy next to him can get to balls in the hole allows him to cheat a different way. Like, I think there's a lot of things within the game and within like movement strategies and movement preferences that I think is kind of the next wave of thinking. You know, like, we all can look at force plates, we all can look at the metrics on there and figure out ways to like influence and impact those metrics, but they don't always directly correlate to the field. There's plenty of guys that I've been around that either hit 30 home runs in the big leagues or like, you know, they're elite gold glove defenders and they look unathletic in the weight room, but then you put them on the field and they're really good. And like, if you try to put certain drills on them in the weight room or in the cage or whatever, they actually look worse in the game. Like I don't know. It just feels like there's this push to like make a formula to create a major league player. And I'm not sure that formula is ever going to exist. Maybe it will. If somebody finds it, they're going to be a millionaire, probably a billionaire. But I haven't found it thus far. And I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, of like digging into their strengths, digging into those weaknesses, finding where the kind of chain falls apart, and like, how can we make that transfer stick? Is it always us? Is it coaches? Is it nutrition? Is it sometimes just luck? Is there some point where the player kind of taps their potential and now we're just trying to keep them healthy and productive? Like, have you guys kind of had any thoughts on that? That's where my wheels have been spinning lately, to be honest. I'm losing sleep over it. It's getting to be that time of year.
Yeah, I'll chime in here. I don't have a great I definitely don't have a solution for you, so I'm sorry that I'm not going to turn you into billionaire okay. overnight, but
I'd split it with you if you did.
I appreciate that, Chris. I mean, my first thought is I would be very skeptical of anyone that communicates in absolutes, right? So the people that say, well, if we can do X and Y, we're going to get Z, whether that's strength and conditioning, sports science, skill acquisition, biomechanics, no matter what, I think if we don't acknowledge the limitations that exist from being within the walls of our weight room, within the walls of this clubhouse, and removing those, you know, having that type of stimuli and then complete 180 degree change in stimuli and external environment when they're out on the field being asked to perform in that environment. For someone that claims like, hey, all we need to do is 4 Nordic hamstring curls and we're going to mitigate hamstring risk. All we need to do is jump counter movement and squat jump on the force decks, and we're going to have all the information that we need to make this guy hit 30 bombs. Like, I would be very skeptical of someone that claims that. That's the first piece of it for me. The second, to the point of how do we search for solutions to basically make these trainable qualities stick out on the field. I think all 30 teams are like in the pursuit, in the hunt of this formula, of this like math equation. And I feel like my intuition tells me that has something to do with the environment, right? Like something that is happening, stress levels, how their perception of external things, obviously feeds their internal thought processes and state of being. I think very much affects how you physically show up. I think your preparedness in between bouts of effort or performances almost certainly affects how you show up. And never mind the navigation of travel and such that occurs in our environment. So I feel like the more that we can create representative practice, meaning let's put them in a like situation in their training environments, whether it's create some form of chaos, whether it's pull at the things that they're most uncomfortable with and actually feed those mechanisms, feed the issue, if you will, feed a problem that is evident that we've identified, we're going to give them a chance to at least help to begin to solve some problems for themselves. And we can kind of help guide as part of that process. But ultimately, I do feel like the player drives that as well. And that touches, again, like takes us back to our point on if we aren't getting wholehearted feedback, truthful information from the player themselves, good luck. The best programs I've ever written were basically written by the player themselves through conversation, through, yes, of course, observation and figuring out what works. But if we do our jobs, I feel like that the player is well prepared to handle whatever it is that we throw their way. And not only is that the case, but I feel like that they could probably write up a lift themselves. They could write up their pre-bullpen routine, a pre-cage routine. And I feel like that that's developed through a common place of understanding and through the questions.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, Logan. I think Yeah, maybe a couple of things to add off of that, like to your last point. I think how do we get it to stick, right, from practice to the game? I think Logan mentioned something that's really important, and I think that's where we're trending right now is the representative design and practice and the drills. And I think that stuff makes a huge difference, because if your practice environment is drastically different from the environment that you're going to compete in, it's kind of hard to get that carryover. I mean, I think a lot of the best players find it because they're just elite. Like, they are elite in everything that they do, and they make it work. But I think there's ways that we can come up with better drills and better, more representative practice design to help mimic what the situations are going to be like in game. For strength coaches, I know there's a million ways to do it with actual like baseball practice design, but you know, a simple way that we can do stuff in the weight room is to, you know, pitchers on their side days create some kind of circuit to where they're having to operate and do specific stability or focus based drills while fatigued after just running a heart rate bumper up to 170. So there is stuff like, although you're not going to be solving a crossword puzzle on the mound while you're fatigued in the weight room, like, there is some correlation in my mind there. Like, you're in a super fatigued, sympathetic state, and we're asking you to focus and zone in, which is something that I believe you have to do when you're out there in the box or on the mound. And I think another piece of it is, it might be a little Eastern, a little woo-woo, but I do think awareness is one of the most underappreciated attributes in some of the elite players, whether they know it, that they have it or not. And I think that, practice design aside, I think if you are aware every day of what you're doing and who you are, what you're good at, what you're not good at, what the routines that you have in place, how they make you feel, how they make you feel when you're tired, how they make you feel when you're good, what things you can adjust to help you make a certain or feel a certain way. I think it just creates a coach within the player. They're able to understand what's going on in their body and how they're feeling in that moment and make the adjustment. Because the hitting coach isn't in the box and the pitching coach isn't on the mound. So these guys need to be able to understand where they are in space, what their heart rate's doing, what triggers them mentally during the game, and be able to practice that skill during practice and develop a coping strategy to deal with things that happen throughout the course of the game. And I think that starts with awareness and looking inward and truly taking ownership and understanding of what you're doing on a daily basis. And then the last part, more to the first part of the question about strengths versus weaknesses. We had Stu McMillan come in, I believe it was last spring training, and he talked to us and took our guys through some running drills and then spoke to our staff on the side. I think he got into a little bit of the aerial terrestrial debate, which is something that I'm familiar with, but I'm not going to speak on it too much because it's definitely not my wheelhouse. But the point he kept coming back to was, you know, your strengths are your strengths for a reason. And in sports and elite sports like this, their strengths are often what make them elite. And to sacrifice the strengths to only work on the weaknesses, you could be doing an athlete a disservice. And that's not to say, hey, my strengths are my strengths, I'm going to play to my strengths, and, you know, I'm not a speed guy, so screw running mechanics. Like, I'm not going to work on it or what have you. Like, no, there is a place. You need to bring your weaknesses up a little bit, and there is merit to working on them. But you need to also make sure that you're not neglecting the strengths, because the strengths make you the player that you are. And then when it comes to specific movement strategies, you need to be on the same, like, everybody needs to be on the same page with what's best for the player. Because if he loads his glute poorly and you're trying to increase his capacity to load his glute more to get out of it, but that doesn't align with the type of pitcher that he is, now are you doing him a disservice? Like, is him getting into his glute taking away from what he's actually good at? Maybe he does need to be a quad load guy. Maybe that makes all his other stuff nasty. Maybe if you teach him to shorten his arm stroke, he loses the deception. So now, yeah, his mechanics are quote unquote cleaner, but he loses the deception in the process, which was his strength. So it's a super delicate and fluid balance. And I know there was a lot in that answer, but I think I just wanted to layer a couple things on, because Logan pretty much nailed it in his response.
I'm having a really good time just going through this conversation with you guys. And every time we talk about one thing, I have like four other things that I want to hit on. So I'm going to start like easiest to hardest here. The first one is, Logan, you're talking about like best programs and like players being able to basically like fend for themselves. I am like really of the belief that the only way the game doesn't get played is if the players aren't there, right? Everybody else is support staff for a reason. And even to the point of the manager, like if you don't have a manager, the players will figure out a lineup. We've been doing it since we were kids in Little League. You know what I mean? You show up at the field, play with your buddies. You're going to hit first, second, third, whatever. The strength coaches don't need to be there, right? Like guys are going to work out. They're going to run. They're going to take care of themselves. Now, if we're there, can we help hold them accountable when they're feeling a little bit lazy or just, you know, winded or whatever? Of course. But I think some coaches take themselves so seriously that, like, if you don't follow my program, you're not going to get better. And I think that's ridiculous, to be completely frank with you. Like, I think there are times where guys are okay. And I can give you an example. Again, I like specific examples. One of the past few years, I was by myself. We had some COVID issues, whatever, with the staff. And I had guys like, hey, listen, I need you to go out and do this is the running today. I need to cover the weight room. Can you handle that? Yeah, of course. No problem. And, you know, we have the TVs in the weight room or whatever that we can see. And, you know, everybody goes out and they take care of their business. I wasn't able to go out on the field at all because I thought priority was being in the weight room. I didn't want anybody to get hurt in the weight room. But they went out and they did their running without me, you know, and it's like the world didn't end. The game went on. We still played that night. I don't know if we won or lost. You know what I mean? But like the game was still played and nobody got hurt. Everything was okay. And like, whether I'm out there or not, they're going to do that running most likely, especially if they do respect me enough while I'm here to be like, hey, I really think this is valuable for you. Like you should do it. But even if you're not, like, guys are just going to take care of themselves. That's kind of the nature of the game nowadays. Like, if you're the guy who doesn't lift or train, you're kind of the outlier versus back in the old day. It was like, if you lift, you're kind of the weirdo. Like, no, you shouldn't lift because you're going to get tight or stiff. Like, that kind of has gone by the wayside. So, like, it's a really good way to put things in perspective for yourself and keep your ego in line of, like, the game's going to go on whether I'm here or not. So I'm just here to kind of help, right? Like you talk about earlier, Nate, like how can I be of service? Like if I'm not here versus I am here, what am I doing to make it better because I'm here? Not I'm here for me. You know what I mean? So that one I think is probably the easiest one. The next two we can go whichever way you want. So first, Nate, you talk about training under fatigue. This is a hill that I will absolutely die on. Like, I don't think players train under fatigue enough. I think whether it's April, September, whether it's a 1 o'clock game, a 7 o'clock game, guys always have some level of base fatigue. And then once they get into the game, the adrenaline of the game has their heart rate elevated anyways. They have to learn how to produce outputs under some sort of level of fatigue or higher heart rate. And I think the push to be away from conditioning and to be away from running and to be away from training under fatigue, I understand like skill acquisition matters when you're fresh, you're feeling good. But I would argue I've had conversations with players where they have never felt good in a season. Even the transition from day games and spring training to night games early in the season, like, takes its toll. For us this year, like, we open with 10 games on the West Coast. So, like, we have spring training in Florida. We have 2 games in Texas to finish our spring training out. Then we go to Seattle, Oakland, LA. By the time they get back to Boston, it's going to be middle of April. So, like, there's already multiple time zones that have been changed, and we're 2 weeks into the season. So, all of that skill work that you did when you're fresh is great. It's really valuable to like try to raise that ceiling. But I think a lot of it is raising that floor and being able to work under levels of fatigue. So if you guys want to run with that, we can. The other one is the strengths versus weaknesses thing. I love what you said with Stu, just saying like your strengths made you your strengths for a reason. If you're like just throwing out easy numbers, if you're a 10 war hitter and a 2 war defender, and you try to raise that defense up 2, and you're accepting like, well, there might be a little drop off to 8, you're still a 12 war player, whether it was 10-2 or 8-4. Like, it's, again, I have my own issues with war or whatever, but just the general idea of like, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul doesn't always work. Where I think that where my wheels have been spinning specifically with movement strategy and force production is like, if I know a guy's strengths and a guy's preference of movement and it works for him, maybe I can increase his weaknesses or hide them better or make him better at it by putting him in advantageous positions in training versus trying to do it one way because this player is a really good defender or a really good hitter doing this. It's kind of like the simplest way I think I could explain it is like if you throw sidearm naturally and I want you to increase your velo, there's two ways you can do it. You can change the arm slot and go overhead. But as soon as you go to the game, you're going to naturally go back to sidearm and you're probably not going to throw any harder. Or I guess there's three ways. Or you can practice sidearm and get better at throwing harder sidearm. Or you can scrap the whole thing and throw over the top and just commit to that. And then that takes time, which we hit on at the beginning. Like most people don't want time. They want the answer right now. So that's really long-winded. We can go anywhere we want, or you can shut me up and like, be like, dude, we're not going down that rabbit hole. I don't want to, but I will die on the, you need to train more under fatigue, not all the time, but there is a time and a place. And the fact that I think we obsess about guys' weaknesses and we take away from their strengths and who they are that makes them the elite of the elite. If you have any thoughts on that, I would love to run on it. If you tell me to shut up now, we can shut it down right now.
Okay, everybody, that's going to conclude part two of this episode with Logan and Nate. To be honest, there's still about 40 minutes left of this interview, so this is going to be the first three-part episode that we've ever had for the podcast. But there's just so much content to take in each part that I wanted to make it digestible. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode: use assessment data to paint a picture of where the athlete is at and use it to create a plan for progress. Creating representative training and practice may help with transfer of skill to actual game scenarios, and players have to have awareness and understanding of their bodies in order to achieve success. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.